People are always screwing up my name. Why is that? Asked the police officer. I'm a teacher, and several years ago, the counselor accidentally put Miller instead of Masterson on the class schedules, and the kids were calling me Miller, some were calling me Mr. Masterson. Eventually, they just started calling me Mr. Marshall. Regardless, I'd like to talk to you about some things for just a moment. Marshall shrugged his shoulders. Sure, what's this in regard to? The officer gave him a professional-looking smile as he entered the living room. His hands were still on his hips. He answered Marshall's question with a question of his own. Do you have a student named Debbie? The officer gave him a professional-looking smile again. Marshall had to think fast. Hesitate, like it was something you really had to think about, or just blurt out a yes. He put his finger to his lips as if to be thinking. Yes, I do. She is a student of mine. You seen her lately? What? Asked Marshall. His tone was now turning defensive. Well, it seems. Listen, before you answer, said Marshall, would you like to have a seat? No thanks, said the cop. Something to drink, maybe? No. Then you must also know that she's missed quite a bit of school. I'm not talking about at school. Has she ever been here? No. Wait a minute, officer. I think you've got some facts a little screwy here. Well, it seems her friend Nathan saw you with her. I saw Nathan hit that girl, said Marshall. When I saw him do it, I called 911. Is that what this is all about? Nathan Calhoun says he saw you hit her. He saw me hitting that girl? How ridiculous. That boy, listen, I know that kid. He's nothing but a little brat. He's a liar. Well, there's a big problem with what you're saying, said the cop. What's that, asked Marshall. Well, Debbie says you did it. She didn't at first, but now she's saying that you're the one that was pounding on her face. Oh, come on. She's obviously covering for that brat, said Marshall. They're an item, I understand. Well, I suppose she could be right, answered the cop. It's really not for me to decide. It's for a judge or a jury, whatever. I've got enough here to arrest you for that assault. Now, I'm sorry, Mr. Marshall, but you're going to have to come with me. This was absolutely ridiculous. Marshall's voice was loud and angry. now, Marshall, there's no need to be like that. Do you have a lawyer? It's okay with me if you want to try to call one before we go. Yes, I have a lawyer, and he's going to have your job. Marshall reached into the back pocket of his chinos and produced a wallet. He began rummaging through the thick stack of business cards he kept there. He was looking for the card of a lawyer he had used once when he had had a slight fender bender a few years back. He didn't want the cop to know it, but it was doubtful the guy would even remember. That's assuming he still had a law practice with the same phone number that was shown on the worn business card. The cop had other motives than just being a kind cop. While Marshall was tinkering with his business cards and pretending to have a lawyer, this gave the crafty cop time to take a good look around Marshall's apartment. He soaked it all in and looked intently for what he wasn't sure. One thing was certain, though. A grown man that was beating on a 16-year-old girl wasn't normal. He felt certain that this was the fringe of something much more sinister. The cop had learned a long time ago an amazing fact about icebergs, of all things. Only 10% of them are above the water. That leaves 90% unseen. The old tip of the iceberg analogy had proven itself to be true over and over again in police work. Getting a big bust that might involve the media was what he needed to make detective. If he could figure out where the rest of this iceberg was, that might be just what he finally needed to get that job. "What's your name, officer?" asked Marshall rudely. He now had the phone in his hand and was obviously talking to someone. The young officer smiled. The knife stick dangling around his knees began to move back and forth as he rocked heel to toe. His falling head flicked from the overhead track light. On what to do. They were instructions he didn't want to hear, though. The lawyer was telling him to cooperate fully and to do exactly what the officer was asking of him, namely to allow him to take him to the police station. "Okay," said Marshall as he hung up. "He said for me to cooperate, so that's what I'm going to do. Are you going to handcuff me?" "Well, that won't be necessary," said McKnight. The cop took one more hard look around the 90% of the iceberg must be there somewhere, he thought. He would have given anything to look under chairs and couches if Marshall would have left the room. He might have done that, despite the fact that he didn't have any kind of a warrant. You can't search someone's house without a warrant. Everyone did it, though. He knew guys on the floors that had kept their stars shining by the occasional illegal button. Stop to think about it. Who gets hurt? The guy's career gets a boost, and the criminal gets nabbed. It's all in the name of justice. The purpose is to get the bad guy. "Why did you hit that girl?" asked McKnight, just bluntly out of the blue. "I don't have to talk to you," said Marshall. They headed toward the front door. McKnight followed. Normally, these sorts of things end in probation. The best thing to do is to just tell me the truth. "I'm not going to talk to you, McKnight. Didn't you hear me the first time?" "Well, it's up to you," said the cop. "I was just trying to help." Marshall cringed at what the young cop was trying to do. He was so bad at playing. guy without the hurting him, and he could clearly sense the danger of his curiosity. There were too many things to be found out. If this guy were really to know what happened, what it was that Marshall had done, a little bad publicity and losing his job would be like a day in the park compared to what would happen to him. Do the words lethal injection mean anything? He thought to himself as he walked with McKnight to his patrol car. The short ride to the police station was quiet and uneventful. The cop's bald head barely poked up over the headrest in front of him. Police chatter rattled over the patrol car's radio at a loud volume, so loud that it would have made the task of conversation mostly impossible. The arrival at the police station brought some nervousness, but once inside, Marshall could see there was really nothing to be scared of. Not in his situation. He was fingerprinted, photographed, and he was allowed his one phone call. He called the lawyer to let him know he'd been booked. Bell had been set at $1,000 and would be posted by his new best friend, the lawyer, within the hour. That's what the guy had promised anyway. Hopefully, he would come through quickly. He wanted to jump to say it didn't have to wear it was about 3 sizes too big. No underwear was included. The cell they put him in was small and dirty. Small little black looking flies swarmed around the combination stainless steel sink and toilet. The water smelled polluted. Graffiti covered the walls where the paint had long ago been peeled off. Marking the territory and laughing at the system. These curse words to describe the jailers with pens and markers that could only have been smuggled contraband. Marshall was allowed to take nothing with him into the jail. The shoestrings were even taken from his shoes. It was so dirty he didn't even want to sit down. He stood there, careful not to touch anything, wondering what would happen next. There really wasn't any need for the school to find out about what was going on. That was assuming they didn't already know. If they did know, would they allow him to keep teaching? After all, Debbie's claim was being disputed. Nathan's little eyewitness account could surely be discredited in court by a good lawyer.
What seemed like forever, but was in reality barely 30 minutes, brought the clanking of keys and a policeman opening the paint-peeled barred door to his jail cell and informing him that he had made bail and he was free to go. He met his lawyer at the desk where a policeman stood waiting for money to be paid and papers to be signed. Funny, he had been worried that the lawyer wouldn't recognize him, but he barely recognized the lawyer. The man was middle-aged, dressed like a lawyer, but his suit was probably from Sears instead of some fancy suit place. His black hair was slicked back with a combination of mousse and gel, and that made it look as if his hair would break if he touched it. They stepped outside of the police station, and there on the steps that went back down to street level, they discussed things like fees, court dates, and what was to be expected of him in the way of behavior. They also briefly touched on what Marshall was to do if any reporters were to start calling him, something the lawyer thought was distinctively possible. If that were to happen, the lawyer eagerly admitted that he had no experience in such matters and was referring to someone who had handled the media before. They shook hands, and that was it. Marshall only had to wait a few minutes before he was able to hail a cab. The ride home had his head spinning. He hadn't even talked to the lawyer about what to do about his job. He began to become increasingly angry. The more he thought about it, the more he realized how desperately serious the situation was becoming. It was far worse than he had originally led himself to believe. He was beginning to grasp that. Still, the only thing making it serious was Nathan. that little fart, Nathan. He'd been in the way for far too long now. So had his parents. They really had ruined everything. It was as if they had thrown a monkey wrench into his plan. Listen, he couldn't control that kid. That's really what was at the bottom of what was hurting him, the control or lack of it. There was nothing he could do about Misty. There was nothing he could do about that little wife named Summer that never was. There was nothing he could do about Debbie's attachment to Nathan. There was, however, something he could do about Nathan. Nathan didn't have to exist. What an easy solution. Now that was something he could control. If there were no Nathan, the thought he had earlier kicked around in his head, then there would be no Debbie and Nathan. If there were no Nathan, there would be no witness to what happened. Then it would be Debbie's word against his. Probably not enough evidence. Now that was control. That was much more like it. The answer to his problems became a blurry, melting snow, trickling through a brook in some high mountain place. Crystal clear. So clear it was obvious. So obvious the solution that realizing those clear results made him smile as he sat in the back of the taxi cab. The result would put him back on a level playing field. There was only one thing to do. He had to find Nathan. A little accident of some sort would be perfect. He rides that stupid bike. Maybe that would be how to do it. Better still, he walks to school. Maybe a push from behind in the traffic. Make it look like he maybe went out to the street without looking. That sort of thing happens all the time. Kids on their way to school in a hurry dart out into traffic in front of a car. How beautiful are you on the ground now? He said it loud enough for the cab driver to wonder where he was directing such an off-the-wall comment. Marshall laughed at the awkwardness of it all. He couldn't have ever imagined the situation he was facing. And the laugh was a deep one. It came from some place laughs don't normally come from. It was deeper. Not a happy place, but a place that seemed to be in a bad part of the soul. The place where things like revenge and hatred live. Not a place of light, but a place of darkness that was surrounded in even more darkness. It was a place he seemed to like, actually, despite what it was. Despite what it was, it still made him laugh. It didn't matter to him where the laugh came from, just that it came. The puzzled cab driver had followed the directions Marshall had given him to the letter and was pulling into the apartment parking lot just as instructed. Marshall paid him and made his way across the parking lot to his apartment. The pleasure with coming up with the solution to his problem was still with him. That lasted until he caught sight of his front door. It was slightly open. It had been pried open and large wooden splinters were on the ground in front of it like sticks that had fallen from a tree. His first emotion was fear, but this quickly turned to anger. Should he go in? It was possible that whoever it was might still be inside, but that might even be better. How dare someone invade him like this, he thought. The decision to go in was made. He pushed the door open with his foot and slowly began to step inside. He listened for the intruder, but there was nothing out of the ordinary. His movements were slow and cautious, but there was clearly no reason to believe anyone was still in the apartment. Nothing was gone. It couldn't have been robbery. Then he noticed the couch had been moved. Let's see, he said out loud. What was there that had dawned on him? The wires. The wires had been under the couch. It was enough for someone with half a brain to figure out what the pieces were.
There was nothing there except a business card. He dropped the couch with a thud, then reached under to grab the card. He picked it up and read out loud, M. McKnight. Now there were two problems to solve. Thank you for listening. Join us next time as we continue with Darkest, Darker, Dark. I'm Rodney Mathers. Goodbye for now.